New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we have the pleasure today of discussing the Ravens offense from this big win over the Steelers. Great win. Joining me today, a great guest, Qadri Ishmael, former Ravens receiver and Raven great. Qadri, how are you doing?
Ken, thanks for having me on. I am doing wonderful, especially after a great week of rivalry, back and forth, junk talk with friends and family from Pennsylvania, and I have come out victorious on the other end.
The Ravens secure their playoff spot. The AFC North still very much in play. Lots of ways the Ravens can get that. I'll probably go over that in the second part of the show. But an efficient day for Lamar Jackson. Didn't start that way. Didn't look like it was going to be great with those first couple of drives and some incompletions.
You know, it's interesting. I think the play with division opponents, it's always jabs. It's never really come out and just flat out give you a two-piece combo that just knocks you out and or at least makes you stumble. It feels like with this Ravens ball club, it's like, all right, you know, we're just feeling you out. And I think that was what we saw as far as a start to the game. It wasn't necessarily what we wanted, but I think that was what kind of took place. And then once I think Monken and Lamar kind of figured out what is working, I think that's when we started to see the tides change. But I appreciated the fact that it wasn't just about Lamar. It was about Derrick Henry being established, and that to me was the most important thing.
It was, and you know, we've seen this in a lot of videos since the game, but a lot of that was based on the Steelers' aggressiveness going after Lamar in the read option. I think it's something that Monken really realized in the scripted plays, took heavy advantage of that, and there's all sorts of video out there, of course, now of these edge defenders and sometimes in the middle of the line even going after Lamar on the read option and leaving a big hole for Derrick Henry.
Yeah, that's the advantage of talent. And when you're a talent slash, in this particular case, Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, they get together. I think the one thing defensive coordinators, Terrell Austin is the Pittsburgh's defensive coordinator. And I think Terrell, he'd be the first to tell you, okay, how do we take away what they do best? Well, it just so happens what they do best is have the ball in number 8's hand. Oh, wait, he's going to have the ball in his hand to start every single play. So he's priority number one. Lamar himself talked about how he needed to play better, and he's ticked off after really some mid-level performances to his standards anyway. Obviously, to the other quarterbacks, you're like, oh, my God, you play great. So when you look at them going up against the Giants and just how he looked great, and if you look on film as a defensive staff, then your mindset turns to, okay, we just got to like prioritize this. And they did. And then when you look at Derrick Henry, this game kind of really, you know, reestablished him and put him back up on that pedestal of the upper tier guys. You didn't have that in the Philly game per se, or at least you didn't get a chance to really have it. And then obviously with the Giants game, it was okay, did some things. You know, clearly they respected it, but I think once you see Lamar in both Philly as well as in the game against the Giants, I think that's where you just in your mind, like, man, we got to stop him. If we stop him, we get him flustered. We get him off his mark. We get him out of his rhythm. Then everything else, that becomes easier to defend. And I just don't think they realize just how fresh and ready Derrick Henry was, because you can't just prioritize, you know, one or two defenders leaving that quote-unquote run tackle box to go get Lamar. If you do that, it plays right into what the Ravens like to do.
Yeah, they've been very good already these last few weeks of having Lamar assess on a pre-snap basis what's going on with the number of defenders in the box. And if they have a minus one that they can apply to that number, and Lamar's already making a lot of run pass choices based on that, and then post-snap making a lot of read option choices based on that, they've gained some big advantages. And I think that's been one of the big maturity factors or maturing factors in Lamar's play this year, has been the ability to read more pre-snap and post-snap.
I think when you look at Todd Monken's offense, and I've gotten an intimate look of it, it's complex in some regards, but it is so simple in other regards. The complexity is the schemes of how, you know, he'll motion guys, he'll get defenses to kind of, you know, think and pause. That thinking and that pausing, any coordinator would relish that, because then you can pretty much, you know, use your offense's talent against the respective defense. So I think now we're seeing the full-on ownership of Lamar Jackson when he can get to the line, do whatever he feels is in the best interest of the offense to take advantage of the defense. That's that year two mindset that really is just why they're in the position that they're in as far as making the playoffs again, and just seeing the domination of, you know, pretty much Derrick Henry, who I think if you have Derrick Henry back there, but if you also have other running backs, a la a Justice Hill, you're still getting good, strong production. It's just that Derrick is, you know, clearly a generational player and all the things. So it just amplifies and psychologically, I think, affects some of the things that the defenses on the other side of the ball like to do or try to do against your offense.
All right, let's move on to a topic I know is near and dear to your heart, and the Ravens wide receiver room. Obviously, the unfortunate vacation that Diontae Johnson took in Baltimore for a few weeks here before being sent packing. And tomorrow, I guess he'll go through the waiver process and we'll find out what team wins the lottery to get him. But anyway, what do the Ravens need to proceed with at wide receiver right now? Would you be in favor of them going after Odell Beckham if he becomes available, or another vet signing perhaps? Are they going to just deal with the practice squad players they have, which I think Anthony Miller is, I guess, the guy they've chosen now, or use the guys currently on the roster? Wallace is having a pretty good year, and Aguilar to make things happen.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting because as I look at their roster, it's a good roster. And it's so we don't get the glimpse of the practices. And I think that's one thing that the good teams anyway, they prioritize practices as like miniature games. And so if you're showing up and you're making plays consistently week in and week out during those practices, then that means that, yeah, you should be able to go out there and perform in the game. I think case in point is obviously Tez Walker in the Giants game, where, you know, you're being rewarded, if you will, for what you've been able to accomplish in practice and show that, hey, you're not being overlooked. To look at another trade and figure out whether or not you need to add to the receiver room. Am I a little gun shy? I think I am. Again, you know, I would love to be that fly on the wall in the receiving meeting rooms, because it's kind of insulting if I'm Anthony Miller. Yep. I mean, like, what are y'all going out for when I'm right here? I know the entire system, you know, and there may be some personality issues that you just don't, you don't know. We don't know. We will never know unless, you know, some tell-all book comes out. But, you know, that's the speculation of us on the outside. I think Anthony Miller, Tez Walker, Tylan Wallace, and obviously Nelson Aguilar are all capable of going against your nickel and dime defensive backs. And I think that they can be productive and win. I think the main thing is the main thing when it's Bateman, likely Flowers, when it comes to, and obviously Andrews, but he's, you know, he's about to make another Pro Bowl. But I think that's where those guys from a pass catching, you know, big play, got to have it. You're not going to go far in the playoffs if they don't, you know, step up and produce. I think they all have shown that they are more than ready for this moment. It's not too big for them. So why in the heck are we, you know, continually bringing up this same old tired narrative of, oh my God, so-and-so's out there. We got to go get him.
Uh-huh.
That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I can't stand the any name 30-year-old wide receiver becomes available and all Ravens fans want to get him. It's just, it drives me bananas. In terms of the thing. But there is one question at wide receiver I think that is potentially legitimate. It doesn't have to be at wide receiver. It could be at another player that they have around. Anthony Miller might even be the answer. But I think the Ravens may decide that they need a new punt return man. Desmond King had two fumbles this week. Previous week, Tylan Wallace mishandled the ball a couple times. So they may they'll just decide to go with one of them or decide they're going to alternate or whatever. But Harbaugh doesn't suffer fumbles very well. And I am wondering if Anthony Miller might get a shot to return punts.
Yeah, I mean, surely he was doing it when we were in camp. Again, I don't know, you know, because they chart everything, of course, which would be right up your alley. You should apply for that position of charting everything, be a part of their, you should be their head analytics person. We got to go ahead and start that campaign to have Ken McCusack to, you know.
Okay. I do really appreciate the thought. The Ravens have great analytics people and they really were.
No, they don't. They're not as thorough as you, but I would say with Anthony Miller, he's just, something ain't there if you were like, okay, we're just going to do Desmond King. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's, hey, Anthony Miller, oh, let's go ahead over here to Desmond King. That's where, like, in my mind, something happened where he was not consistent enough. And that's what I mean by charting all the different catches and such. And then your attitude as far as like the aggressiveness of the catch, how are you looking at the field? How are you showing up in special teams meetings? All those little things, those are things that, you know, wear on coaches' minds. I think us on the outside, the more I have been on the outside looking in on different teams in general and covering this game, the more I realize that we get caught up on the name on the back of the jersey, and we don't see what perhaps the coaches see that gives the coaches angst. So they pause in leaning on said person. And that's where I think from a punt returning standpoint, Desmond King, he must have, you know, been like, you know, even John said it, he was shorthanded and he felt like he's done it for a while. He looks natural back there. He had some good returns, but you're absolutely right. Like, there's just no place for the fumbling of things and mishandling of the football. And so it leaves a door open for someone to have another opportunity to be on the active roster and potentially be the returner.
All righty. Let's keep going to some other elements. The Ravens won the snap count 62-60. I'd say the team really benefited this week. And you've played on some short weeks lifetimes. You played in some Thursday games, I'm sure, when you played. But they benefited also from low-intensity play at the end of the game, which I really appreciated from the Steelers. And what I mean by that is, just like the Buffalo game, you had an opposing coach who understood the need to just get this damn game over with. And so Tomlin tried to run the football on the last drive. He punted, you know, he surrendered the game effectively with about 9 minutes to go on what I think was a very bad punt decision. But anyway, they ran the ball out the rest of the way. The Buffalo game, they played the last 7 minutes and 17 seconds of that game on 11 plays. Think about that happening in an NFL game. You got to have both coaches basically having a handshake agreement from across the field for that to happen. This game was similar in that respect in terms of getting it done.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because, three games in 11 days, obviously, you know, right after the game, it's like, okay, everybody get out of here. We'll see you tomorrow. Hey, we're going to go out and practice. And it's just, it's wild to me. It's bizarre. Short weeks is one thing, but normally you have like a bye, you know, following that short week and or, you know, going into a short week prior, you have a bye. So in other words, you would have the chance to rest physically as well as mentally. And I think for, you know, both Mike Tomlin and John Harbaugh, smart on their part to recognize, okay, this is in hand. Let's live to fight another day.
So you've played on short weeks before. So when you played Sunday and Thursday, what does the practice schedule look like on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and in particular for a road game? Because this is a Saturday to Thursday, Wednesday, obviously same concept, but what would it look like for a road game?
Yeah, so it's more along the lines of walkthroughs, mm-hmm. a series of walkthroughs, meetings that, you know, you would have obviously, from a scouting department, the four scouts, they are going to, you're relying upon them more than you would as a coaching staff because, you know, there's a lot of information that you got to, you know, put into play so you can get your team ready. So you hopefully are in autopilot mode when it comes to, you know, the guys preparing their bodies to play. Mm-hmm. Autopilot mode is something where, yeah, okay, cool. I got to go out there and play, but I don't need to physically, like, you know, strike another guy to hone in on my technique. My technique should be sound and solid because it's already late in the year.
Okay, so a walkthrough practice is something I've described in camp reports and whatnot, but I want to hear it from you in terms of what you're actually doing. Half speed, typically, quarter speed, perhaps even. You learn your footsteps for a play?
Yeah, so I laugh because it depends on what team you're on. John Harbaugh is a little old school, so his walkthroughs, if you're not a Mark Andrews or a Roquan Smith or a Marlon Humphreys, like it's a darn near kind of almost run-through-ish. And, you know, so the head coach sets that tone, but it's the coordinators who kind of like rule the roost of it. When I, for example, was with the Minnesota Vikings, like it was a true walk through. Like you made sure you had your turf shoes or your cleats on and you did your thing. But you, oh my God, you're hardly even throwing, the quarterback's hardly throwing the ball. When I was with Indy, with Peyton Manning, man, shoot, walk through, you had your helmet, you're making sure, you got to run, you're darn near, it's not full speed, but it sure in the heck ain't no walkthrough. And you're going through pretty much everything. So it's in that same kind of vein of like, yeah, we're going over these plays. Okay, yeah, here's our first and 10. Okay, great. All right, now here's our blitz pickup. All right, come on, let's go ahead and give them a good look. Yeah, like, what do you mean give them a good look? Like, there's nothing physical that we're going to do. Like, okay, we know it's a TE stunt or an ET stunt, or, hey, we know that, sometimes they like to do that cross-sectional stunt where, you got one guy coming from the left side of the center all the way over to the right side, and, you're going to have a pick or whatever. Like,
You can't do that in a walkthrough.
I'm not trying to do this in a walkthrough and get hurt. So it depends. But John's typical old school guy. So it'd be a little bit more of a step up than a chill walkthrough.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Listen to Tomlin's very terse post-game press conference, and he's never really a loquacious, long talker or whatnot, but he was very terse after this game. He basically wanted to, almost using a badminton racket to swat away these questions with very short answers. And basically it came down to two things. One was they didn't get on the football. The other one was that they weren't able to fit on the run in the way they were accustomed to doing, which I think was part of how they set up strategically. We talked a little bit about it early, going after Lamar Jackson, which is something that the Steelers have definitely done in the past.
Yeah, I think their MO has always been like, let's put pressure on Lamar. Let's, get to Lamar, and through Lamar, if the ball carrier has it, knock him on his butt. I thought Todd Monken did an amazing job of the inside zone schemes, some power, didn't really trick it up too much as far as motioning and, overloading, but that read option where Lamar was giving it. And then sometimes where he just flat out was like, hey, it's not a read option, just giving it to Derek. Fine, so be it. But I think all of that just really had this defense off its mark. It wasn't that typical Steelers defense. And you got to give a lot of credit to the scheme that the offensive line had been put forth.
Yeah, definitely. It did some different things in terms of trapping and whatnot in this game that was good. We'll get that in part two and talk a little bit about it. The Steelers have some real lack of roster depth. The loss of Deshaun Elliott in this game, I thought, was absolutely telling in terms of what they could do in terms of tackling. He's had a great year, by the way. Unbelievable. 28 defensive wins and only two missed tackles all year. Whereas Patrick Queen has 31 and 19 or something like that. It's like less than 2-to-1 relationship. Deshaun Elliott basically is the cleanup guy for Patrick Queen's missed tackles, is how I say it. It's been a tough year for Patrick in a lot of ways. But getting back to the roster depth of this team, the Joey Porter injury, obviously pretty serious. Now, Porter, a guy who's just in the middle of the pack of NFL corners at this point, with 15 penalties this year, but a serious injury for them because the drop-off is even greater for them at corner. Is this Steelers team one that over the next 2 weeks, do you think can right the ship and make up for their lack of depth with their current state of the roster?
I think so. And Elliott's injury, is that season ending or is that just a bruised bang up?
I'm not aware that it's season ending, but I really don't know well enough to say. It's kind of like with the hamstring injury by Pickens. I don't think I've heard yet that he's playing on Wednesday, so that would obviously be a severe holdup for them. And Elliott would be in the same case. It's not just like a concussion thing. You expect him to clear protocol, but I don't know the nature of the injury.
And we also know that they're playing the Chiefs and the Bengals?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Mike Tomlin has done an amazing job of putting himself and his team in these really, hey, us against the world, type moments and games. And honestly, he's
he's one of the greatest. He's a coach that I would have loved to have played for. I think I would have been really super motivated to play for him and you know, do my best. But with that said, I think, you know, you look at what the Pittsburgh Steelers are dealing with and are facing. I think it's a really tough uphill climb. You know, I know that with TJ not being at full strength, I mean, I was looking at some of the video from them during the weekend practice. And I'm like, man, that dude, if you think he's okay, then something's wrong with you. He was not his full self, but who cares? Because you got to go out there and play. The depth issue, I think, that's the hope. That's your hope. That's your hope of, yeah, we developed our guys enough that we feel, you know, it's a plug and play situation. I think that's something that in my mind, there's really no one out there on the street that you can just, you know, bring in and everything is just going to be okay. That's the challenge, no matter what team. But in this particular case, that's going to be Pittsburgh's challenge, which I'm sure Kansas City, Andy Reid is saying, hey, we got our issues that we got to deal with as well.
Yeah, absolutely. No one feels sorry for another NFL team. Nobody felt sorry for the 2015 or 21 Ravens in that position, certainly. So you just make do. Let's move on, talk a little bit about Lamar's game here, because specifically, it's one of these games where I didn't feel like he looked that great as the game went on. Made three really nice touchdown passes, right on the money, right where they needed to be, well-schemed up plays in some cases, but won a great throw, won a nice in the lane immediate to the right throw, and won a great scheme play to Isaiah Likely, where the fakery really made the play. Yes. But I thought, in general, I didn't think that his game, when I got home, I looked up, he had 115.4 passer rating. I said, wow, that's higher than I expected, given what's happened. But we just seem to expect perfection out of Lamar and don't remember how few Ravens quarterbacks in their history have had three touchdowns and one interception in a game.
I think when you look at Lamar, he makes the spectacular mundane. And, you know, I'm guilty as everyone else at times of taking it for granted. But I think in this particular game, what I saw was just a guy who was so poised. The interception, I know, you know, he was frustrated with, and it was kind of shocking because, you know, when I'm in the press box looking at the game, I sometimes won't look at the quarterback, but I'll just look at kind of like what the defense is doing. I'll go offensive line, D-line, is there going to be any pressure? But then if it's passing or an obvious pass down, I'll kind of scan the secondary and be like, okay, what are the route concepts and who's open? Well, literally, on that particular interception, I was like, oh, my God, Patrick Ricard is wide open. Why is everybody talking kind of like weird right now? Like you can hear the, oh, the big sigh, and then the huge like roar of the Steeler faithful in the stands. And I was like, what's going on? What are you guys talking about? Like, what happened? I'm like, oh, for heaven's sake, he got it intercepted. So yeah, I think overall his poise, his the way in which he managed the game, It was spectacular. That's the best way I can say it.
Did a great job here, and did a great job under some significant pressure by numbers from the Steelers. Now, this was the most extreme game the entire year. Cincinnati had used a bunch of cover zero looks where they dropped out of it, simulated pressure 15 times in one game. Then they used zero the next. So they were really still fiddling around trying to find the formula to get after Lamar. Pittsburgh sent numbers like they never have before in this game. And go through this quickly. They rushed four on eight plays, 35 yards, 4.4 yards per play. They rushed five, eight other times, 114 net yards, 14.3 yards per play on those. So Lamar really had the way with them when they're doing what people traditionally call a blitz is five plus. But the point is that 16 of the 24 plays, they rushed five plus. They rush 6 5 times, 35 yards, 7 yards per play. They rush 2 7 times, and no yards on those. 1 interception, 1 incomplete pass. And then they rushed 8 1 time, and Lamar got off a 14-yard pass to the left side. 5.17 pass rushers per play, which is just it's otherworldly. There are teams that just go through a whole game pretty much and will use 4, occasionally 3, sometimes 5, really try and drop the cover on Lamar. Pittsburgh figured the best way to deal with Lamar in this game, and perhaps because they're banged up secondary, was to go nuts rushing the passer with numbers.
Well, not only, I mean, you had to bang up secondary, but I can't emphasize enough how T.J. Watt wasn't exactly at 100% either, and sure. I'm not making that as an excuse. I'm just saying factually, and I don't really care that he was banged up. But to your point with the secondary, I think Terrell Austin, what his mindset was, okay, what have we done really well against the offensive line? We've gotten after them. Poor technique or whatever, or us just physically winning, it gave us the advantage. And for Lamar Jackson, it kind of sped things up. So what if we speed things up for Lamar? I think if we go man to man, he's going to have to make tight window throws. So then you also look back at the, you know, first game meeting, he was batting ball, or the balls were being batted down as well. I think, you know, they probably were feeling like they can replicate that as well. So just overall, don't allow Lamar Jackson to have some smooth rhythm. Get him off his mark. You know, make him, you know, beat you in the pocket. Like, don't just rush upfield for the sake of rushing upfield, because he still is Lamar Jackson. But I think they felt like the receivers don't scare us, and we're not fearful of them based upon what the previous game was about. But I think this Ravens team, they were built to prepare themselves for what the Steelers were bringing. And they did, I think, a really good job outside of, like, as you're saying, the two plays, you know, 0 yards, 1 interception. I think in you know, Terrell's mind, he's like, man, we got to get the ball back. And they're in a scoring position, which is where typically you're going to see an aggressive defensive play call anyway.
Yep. Yeah, that's definitely true. Defense, I think the risk-taking component of that is going to be one of the things we look forward to defenses getting better at over the course of the next couple of decades. Because analytics has taken over the game, of course, and you can demonstrate pretty clearly that the defense needs to gamble more to get the offense off the field than the other way around. Offense, if you average yards per play, you drive right down the field, you score. Defense requires variation in the form of penalties, sacks, multiple incomplete passes in a row, et cetera, to get the other team off the field. Turnovers being the big one. But I think we'll see more of that. I think we'll see a shift to more aggressive, particularly in late game one possession leads, more aggressive defense to try and get the opponent off the field. It's a trend I'd look for anyway.
Yeah, you know, and I think not many quarterbacks, even the Lamar Jacksons or the Patrick Mahomes, they don't necessarily like when you bring pressure, but I think they also thrive in that pressure. And I also think, you know, Lamar, I don't know the exact stats, but whether it be the Chargers or whether it be the Giants, I don't think he was, like, outrageously pressured. But he was decisive with his decision making. Well, let's make him uncomfortable. If you're the Steelers, let's make him uncomfortable. Let's figure out a way to get at him and cause him to not have to control him, but not own him. Control his numbers slightly, because you know that, yeah, any moment in time, Lamar can make you miss. And now all of a sudden you got this 40-yard gain or some touchdown because of what Lamar likes to do. But yeah, I absolutely love the fact that, again, from a poise standpoint, Lamar did extremely well.
Now, Lamar has done well in all sorts of circumstances this year, whether pressured, unpressured or not. But I'd like to divide the passing plays into three categories. And one is ample time and space, or ATS, which are plays where the quarterback had a 3-second pocket and the ability to step into his throw. Very important, by the way, that the cone, the throwing cone, as I call it, not be obstructed so the quarterback can confidently step into his throw, because being able to step into your throw is what allows you a lot of accuracy on that throw. The second one is ball out quick, which is a host of plays which are usually designed to the outside. Almost all screen passes fall into this category where there will be some pressure within 3 seconds, but it's intentional and they're trying to get the ball out quick. But also a lot of swing passes, slants, etc. And then pressure events where everything else is the defense is in there within 3 seconds, and the quarterback has to make do with that situation and do the best he can. In this game, Lamar had 7 ample time and space opportunities out of 24, 29%, which is right around normal, right around 29-30% is normal for those kind of opportunities. He went 5 of 7 for 68 yards, 9.7 yards per play. Nothing wrong from that. 8.5 yards per play is my standard with ample time and space. 9.7 is good, so that was solid. 10 ball out quicks, 42% of the time. He went 7 of 10 for 108 yards. That's 10.8 yards per play. That was fantastic. And that did include, by the way, one of those ball out quicks was the 49-yard pass play to Flowers.
Yeah.
And maybe you talk about this a little bit, Kadri, but you know, when you're talking about timing up just a 9 route with a minimal or no fake at the top of the stem. So not necessarily a stutter and go, just maybe a plain go. How quickly does a quarterback need to get the ball out of his hands for you to catch that at 41, 42 yards in the kind of the Joe Walsh range?
Yeah. So what we saw was, it was, I believe that was 0 or at least cover 1. But regardless, that was press man to man. Like, the guy was up at the line of scrimmage. If I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong. But I believe the defender was up at the line trying to get, you know, a disruption from. So when you apply pressure like that, you know, the accuracy of the throw is like, we're going to get to you before you get to us. And we want you to panic, or we don't want you to have the touch of the ball. Like, so what was so beautiful about it was that, you know, they had the awareness, number one. Number two, you saw where Zay made a good decisive release off the line of scrimmage. Well, he stacked right back up on the defender, and that's what got him like in trouble. You can see where the guy's like, oh shoot.
Okay, now I know what stacked means. Tell other folks what you mean as a receiver to stack the corner. What do you mean?
So you're trying to always gain leverage over your opponent. Offensively.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit 2, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Defensively, and one of the things that a receiver wants to do is gain leverage by putting their body in front of. So if I'm going down the football field and I'm not going to break on a route per se, although I could still break on a route, but primarily if I'm going to a 9 route, a deep ball route, in this particular case, this is more of a fade than a true 9 route. And there's nuance to those that we can get into as well. But for the stacking element of it all, once you release off the line of scrimmage, I'm trying to get in front of the defender, because that little bit of space, like a yard and a half, that little bit of space, yard and a half, is everything. And that separates the good receivers from the great ones. And if you can create that space, then the quarterback is like, yes, this is easy for me to throw you the football, which I believe, you know, Lamar just threw a perfectly, you know, dime of a ball. However, I think it was in conjunction with the confidence that he saw in Zay stacking on top of the defender.
So the way I like to describe it is, think about you're driving down the highway, maybe a two-lane highway is involved, and you've got a guy in the left lane and a bunch of trucks that are in the right lane as you're passing by. So you want to get into that left lane, and then there's the guy behind you who wants to get ahead of you. You want that to be the cornerback right behind you. He's got to effectively switch lanes, get back in position to get ahead of you and make a play on that football. Very difficult for him not to A, run into you and have a penalty, or B, make a play at the high point on the ball. You've got him when you've got him stacked. And I think that's a really good description you gave of that there. And if you're even, you're leaving, obviously, but also just if he's stacked, you've got him set up for both of the bad things that can happen on a pass play to the defense.
It's amazing how many touchdowns I caught in my career with the ability to get up on top of the defender and stack him. I think the fact that you know if it's a pass interference, it's easier for it to be called if you're getting up on top of them, about to stack them. Usually the DB feels that, panics, and that's where, you know, he does a Brandon Stevens where he's just, you know, kind of grabbing on you. That grabbing action, you know, it just chaps my ass so much because, you got beat. You didn't use your feet. Now you're resorting to some bush league grabbiness. That ain't it.
Necessary penalties sometimes, Kadri. I'll take a 5-yard penalty as a DB rather than let you have 50 in the air. So
I'm a wide we'll receiver and I hate that.
Yes, I get it. All right. Looking back, it's been 25 years and about 2 weeks since your great game at Pittsburgh. You want to talk about those three touchdowns and actually how you got open on those?
Ooh, so this is interesting because if you know, every year it comes up. I have a huge poster in my office facility showing one of the, I think it was the second touchdown that I had. I forget my own teammate. He was number 49. For us, he was a tight end, big, tall, white tight end. Forget his name. Great guy, though. Yes, please. Number 49. But with that said, interestingly enough, the first play was a backside skinny post. And the rules of engagement was if it's cover three or if it is any off coverage or man coverage, you got to win on a route, stack them, then you're going to run your skinny post to the inside. It was at the line, it looked like it was going to be cover one. But what you got to do is that's the pre-snap read. There is at the snap, and then there is the post-snap. And so with that, I go to the line, the pre-snap is, Dwayne Washington, I believe, was the guy. So, okay, Dwayne's coming up towards me. The safety looks like he's back. Okay, this is cover one. I guess I'm going to keep it on. Well, then as the ball is snapped, I see Dwayne playing more of a settled down cover two-ish type look. And post-snap, I see the safety running out. I'm like, oh, this is cover two. So now my rules of engagement changes, and I have to force an outside release, stay. I use the word, it's a skinny post, but I also have to get real thin or tight to the top of the numbers, stay on that top of the numbers. Don't let him push me off my landmark. When I get to the 12-yard mark, the ball's going to be thrown to about 18 yards, and it's going to be thrown to the outside. I got to be on the same page with the quarterback
And sure enough, as I look up, I'm like, yes, he saw everything that I just described. I go up and make the catch. And in making the catch, the safety for the Steelers literally saw my ribs and just, whoa, just smashed me. And as I'm going down, I'm like, this sucks so bad because the wind is knocked out of me. My body is going to be aching. I might as well just go down. Oh, wait a second, Kadri. Do you see that yellow in the end zone? Oh, my goodness. There is no one around me. Are you kidding me? Screw all the, oh, you hurt my ribs. Let's run this thing into the end zone. So I sprinted and like literally I just didn't care. And so when I got into the end zone, I mean, I immediately collapsed and it was hilarious. Like I was hurting bad. It was bad. So then the second one.
Steve Shields, by the way, was I think the safety might have been on that side of the field. Might have been the other guy. Oh, and Ryan Collins is the tight end, number 49.
Ryan Collins. That's my guy.
and Steve Shields was involved in two of the touchdowns. I've looked at the film a lot of times, but I can't remember if it was 1 and 2, 1 and 3, 2 and 3 that he was involved in.
But he was definitely involved in the first one. He got fussed out in the first one. The second one, he definitely was involved in too. He took the worst angle known to man. So that second one was the skinny post. Same rules apply. Well, guess what? Now it's cover one. I release off the line of scrimmage. I kind of get a good inside release, but I stack back up on, or I was trying to really overly stack, and I couldn't necessarily. So I kind of nudged him, meaning nudged Dwayne Washington, the corner, and I stuck my foot in the ground. And now all of a sudden, the ball is just right on me, like beautiful. So then, yeah, Scott Shields, I guess he took that little poor angle, and I was like, whoop. And I mean, I took off. So that was a great man-to-man beater. And then the third one, here's the thing on that one. So, like, my whole ribs were just, like, sore. They took me off kickoff return. They go down, they score. We need to, like, finish this game or else, you know, it might be too close and they're going to come back and win. It's first down, run, second down, something. Billy Davis was in the game.
Billy Davis.
My backup. And Billy was the Nelson Aguilar of our team. Special teams dude, but, you know, would go in and spell a guy real quick. And so I'm sitting there, and Matt Kavanaugh, my offensive coordinator, he's not in the booth. He's on the sideline. He looks over, and it was third down. And he goes, Q, can you go? And I was like, yeah. Like, I was kind of like, well, what's the play? He goes, it's a takeoff. I was like, bet, I'm in. I ran in there so fast. So a takeoff, it's an individual call. They tagged the ex-receiver with a stutter and go. And for me, I was like, well, shoot, that's my bread and butter. I'll stutter and go all day. And I've scored so many touchdowns over my career on stutter and go. So I'm like, yeah. So I ran. I was like, Billy, get your ass out. I was like, they need you on the sideline. So I go in there. They call a play. And sure enough, I think that time it was zero coverage. And literally, Dwayne and I, we were teammates in Minnesota. Dwayne had this weird thing where in zero coverage, he would panic. And if he missed you, he was fast enough to recover, but he was always trying to jump a route. And so in the midst of him trying to jump the route, I was like, ha ha, I did a great stutter and he tripped up. And so when I look back for the ball, I'm like, oh, Dwayne's nowhere to be found. Ball's up in the air. Now I'm like, this is one of the easiest touchdowns I'll ever have. It was like pat and go on steroids. Caught the ball nice and easy. And literally, like I three-quarter jogged into the end zone. That's how like wide open I was. And it was just like the best ever. So that's where the game of games came in.
All right. Well, Tony Banks, we thought we had a quarterback at that point too, coming out of that game, even though I think he only completed like 8 of 26 passes in that game and 6 of them were to you, if I recall correctly. It wasn't a great passing game. But anyway, Billy Davis, also quite the character now after he's left football. I've met him in the Dallas airport. Weird individual thing. He just introduced himself to me, and he had his Super Bowl ring on him, and he showed that to me, which I've always found that a little weird. That I understand if a player wants to wear it all the time, but would you carry it in your pocket all the time and like pull it out to show people, kind of thing? It was a little bit stranger, but he had some great moments for the Ravens. Boy, he did. That 2000 Jacksonville game where he had the great comeback, he had 2 second and 10 conversions on that final drive leading to the Shannon Sharp score. So made some big catches in some very limited duty, got called out by Jerry Glanville on the Super Bowl broadcast for his kick coverage, which never happens.
Wow.
Wow. A bunch of punts in there. Yeah.
That's interesting because I think, you know, for he and I, we were roommates on the road before I realized I can have my own room. But he was amazing dude, great teammate, but definitely had his quirks and weirdness. He would literally, like, his Super Bowl ring from the Cowboys, he had a lot of pride in wearing it or having it readily available. But there's times I will admit too, like, you know, I'm going to an appearance and I know, yes, okay, they want me to bring my ring, but I'll put that thing in my pocket as well because, you know, you just don't want to just be wearing it around all the time. And, or if you're out and about, you know, I kind of turn it the other way. Nowadays, they're so doggone gaudy. If you turn it the other way, your whole hand would be like opened up because you couldn't necessarily hide all the, you know, the diamonds and everything that's on it. It's so doggone huge. But yeah, man, I love the fact that, you know, from a Billy Davis or, like you said, Shannon Sharp, I mean, all of us, Goose, everybody, you know, Michael McCrary, all of us, we just had this, you know, that team was just so, we all were weird. We all in a special way, and it vibed, it worked, it was awesome. And it made for some fun stories and fun times.
All right. Let's get back to the game this week against the Steelers. I want to talk about that a little more. But Lamar outperformed his opportunity set overall by about 54 yards relative to the standard I use, 198 net versus 144 expected. That's 2.3 yards per pass above expectation. Meanwhile, the Ravens secondary did a great job of holding down Wilson to 10 yards under his opportunity set. That was one of the big differences in this game, was the play of the secondary. Not surprisingly, because they were very banged up in terms of how things were going. And the Ravens have played some great defensive football these last 5 weeks.
Yeah, you know, I think from the defensive standpoint, you know, again, Lamar, I just thought that once he warmed up, once the Ravens offense kind of marinated the hell out of the Steelers defensive line with a heavy dose of Derrick Henry and tenderized the meat so much that when they put it in broil so you can get that nice good old browning on both sides and that charring, so then you can have it medium rare and just nice and juicy and succulent, man, that's when Lamar was at his best. And it was the prime of prime ribs with the tenderloin just being just ever so luscious at Porterhouse. I think we need to go to a steakhouse and celebrate this after the show, but I digress. I think the bigger point was that Lamar / Todd Monken did an amazing job of not only play calling, but play calling rhythm of when to do what. And that's where I think we saw the awesomeness for what Lamar and them were doing.
Yeah, not a huge running game for Lamar, but Lamar made his presence felt on those read option plays and got a few yards, but mostly it opened up a lot of holes for Derrick Henry in this one. I did want to get your opinion on one particular play. The interception thrown, it looked like Bateman stopped on the route. Can you give me an idea of what Bateman was expecting and what Lamar was expecting and how they might not have been on the same page?
Yeah, so again, when I was talking about my Steelers moment and you look at the defense pre, you look at the defense glimpsing it right at the snap, and then you glimpse it one more time post-snap, all of that, you got to make those decisions. I mean, like, it feels like in real time that it's, you know, an eternity and you got all day to do it. But the reality of it all is that in real time, you only have like a blip of a second before you got to be on the same page with your quarterback. And I think what Lamar saw was more of a man-to-man-ish type situation, whereas Bateman clearly was like, well, here's a hole right here. Like, I'm just going to sit right here. Like, why should I run, you know, into the safety? And I think for Lamar, you could even see it the way he was trying to lead him. And Bateman kind of like the way he looked like, whoa, what are you doing? Like, again, my initial concentration, my initial concentration was on Pat McCarr being wide open. And I'm like, why is everybody like, oh, but as I kept looking back on it, yeah, that's exactly what happened is that he thought it was man and he thought it was zone. When it's zone, you sit down in that hole in the defense. When it's man, you keep on running. And I think for Lamar, he thought it was man and threw it accordingly. And that's what caused that turnover.
All right. All right. Well, the first one of the year that didn't hit the receiver's hands first. So we'll live with that. Any feeling? Well, actually, you know what? We're going to leave the MVP voting because I don't really care enough about it in terms of the voter fatigue and all. I'd love to see Lamar win another MVP, but honestly, the back and forth chirpy debate between Ravens and Bills fans, I just find kind of annoying on Twitter.
It is. I love the passion of both, but honestly, they're just really, I mean, yes, has Josh Allen have those signature type moments and games? Yes. But Lamar far and away has had the better season, and the MVP, just, you can't, I don't even know why we even having, you know, talk about it. Like, Lamar is the better MVP candidate. And outside of that Pittsburgh game, where you probably could have judged him harshly, but Lamar is more than made up for it against the Chargers, against the Giants, against the Steelers again. You know, like, I don't even know why we're even having this discussion.
Well, there you go. Let's look a little bit about other scheme and whatnot, the receivers, the running backs. Not a lot of total snaps for Hill in this game because of the injury, obviously. He had 7, Henry 46, Ali 9, Mitchell inactive. We did have a couple of questions come up about usage of Mitchell and availability of Mitchell and whatnot. Ryan Head XO said, do you think Mitchell gets a role after the Hill concussion? Seems strange to me that he's been inactive for the last few weeks, but not on the injury report. Randy Morgan says, this has to be the game for Keaton Mitchell, right? How do you think they will use Mitchell in this game coming up on Wednesday?
Boy, I pray that they do. And here's a few things that I kind of was gleaning from the bigger picture of the organization. So, you know, when Eric DaCosta was asked about Keaton Mitchell, in his mind, it wasn't necessarily a priority to use him, especially this year. It was more along the lines of, hey, we got Keaton Mitchell. We love what he brings to the table. Let's continue to rehab him and keep him ahead of schedule so we don't have a setback. I don't think that there was an overt setback, but what I don't think people realize, the ligament goes from bone to bone, tendon goes from bone to muscle. The bursa, I think, what are there, 5 in the knee or something like that? I think 9 in the shoulder or something like that. And so there are some issues that you can have from a soft tissue aspect that kind of jacks up the full speed, super fast twitch muscle firing mechanics,
and the kinesthetic awareness of a dynamic, explosive runner like Keaton can have a, it can have a profound effect on him. And so you got to be real careful, because then you, you run into other issues down the road, like a Nick Chubb, who for the Cleveland Browns had a devastating knee injury. You know, they brought him back, but you could see where it's like, okay, he needed that next year. You know, while he was able to fire his muscles and squat, you know, whatever, 400, 500 pounds, but that's different. That's a, an action that is a reverse moving action that you need a forward gear, explosive, you know, super fast twitch, be able to have good change of direction type movement. And I think for Keaton, and I think for what Eric was saying early in the year, you just don't want to just throw him back out there. Okay, great. That's where for him, he was looking a lot better.
Okay, so a couple of things have happened recently. First of all, they played on the MetLife turf in New Jersey. And even though the stuff is supposed to have been made better and changed and this and that, I don't trust the stuff. Not for a second. So I can understand why they left him out of that game. Also, not an important game. Then they played, you know, the three games in this 10-day period that they're trying to get through, and they left him out of the Steelers game. Additionally, I'm wondering if that means they wanted to get him back on the field this week anyway. I wonder if that was the plan to get him back. But here's the other question that comes out of this. You mentioned the twitchiness as being something he may have to kind of, I guess, relearn would be the way to describe it in terms of the muscle and how it reacts to him, you know, how quick he can be on that. I wondered if it might be also some J.K. Dobbins stuff where he doesn't have the durability to run even 100 yards. And you notice he's great for the first 10 or 15, and then he looks like he's carrying a piano, which is really like it looked like with Dobbins when he first came back, left a ton of yards on the field. More twitchiness or more ability to maintain long speed?
Yeah, so the twitchiness factor, again, both of them, let's be clear, both of them, it's super fast twitch muscle fiber. The twitchiness comes from the talent of the individual, whether or not they have that ability to stop, have the Golgi receptors be able to feel out. And then if the myelin sheath of the nerve endings are strong and you have that reactivity, you can move laterally extremely quick. But the out and out, you know, that durability to now maintain the upper tier of fast twitch to super fast twitch max velocity, that to me is what Keaton Mitchell's superpower is. He's more, in my opinion, he's more of a max velocity type of a running back. And so I think that is even tougher to get back when you were down, you know, with the injury that he had. So sure, you can say strategy wise, it was always, you know, the goal to bring him back at, you know, this point in time in the three games in 11 days. And sure, you know, it works in their favor being that, you know, you had an extremely hot hand in Justice Hill. So in my mind, like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. like, save Keaton, because you already got Justice doing his thing. And there's chemistry and rhythm there. I'm not worrying about pass protection. You know, Keaton doesn't have to worry about that. That's a different max loading as well, because now you got some of the fast twitch and slow twitch fibers trying to, you know, buffer yourself up against a large human and do some pass protection. So, you know, there's so many factors in there that I think for, you know, again, the report, however they report it, is one where, yeah, we're all on the same page as far as like, we don't need to necessarily rush him back. Let's
just chill for right now. And that, to me, I think is everything when it comes to Keaton Mitchell, both short-term and long-term. So if he plays against Houston, great. They got natural grass. But if he doesn't play against them, I'm fine with that too.
They got natural grass indoors in Reliant? I didn't know that. It might be true. I don't know.
Okay. I'm pretty sure they do. I thought
a rollout field or something like they have in Arizona. Okay.
Yeah. I thought it was similar in that regards or something. Why am I drawing a blank on that? Because I played in Reliant. I should know this.
All right. Well, that's okay. I mean, there's a lot of stadiums around the league, and even the indoor stadiums have gone back and forth. It's one of the really funny things was they tried to grow grass in the Astrodome originally, and that was, of course, the first one. They had no idea how to do it, that didn't work out, and they had to go to turf. But if you had to over under Keaton Mitchell snaps this week in Houston, where would you put it?
Ooh. I mean, he's not really a high volume carrier anyway. Like, I would say, shoot, if he got, good God, if he got, I'd say an under. I'm going for the under of 11.
Okay, that's
that'd be a lot.
I've got it at 4. I think they'll use Ali more for the and not carries. I'm talking about snaps.
That's what I'm saying. That's a lot.
The only place that I've been, I mean, he is limited in terms of what he can do as a pass blocker. So the only thing that I've really been concerned about is that they really haven't used him for the amount of misdirection they could have gotten out of him this year. Because if you line him up we'll call it a pony package where you have two running backs in the field, but he's lined up wide in the slot, he can give you what Zay Flowers can give you in terms of crossing the formation for misdirection, and he can carry the football sometimes, but it frees up Zay to do a lot more things in down the field. And you probably only have one tight end in that situation, obviously, but it does give you a lot of ability to make the defense make some bad choices.
You know, the thing I think we're looking at, and this is where Todd Monken has to, you know, stay true to himself. We love the show. We love the pizzazz and the, you know, all the trickery and everything. And I'm sure in college, you know, that would be great and grand and all the things. But I think, you know, Todd probably has been reminded, I already got Lamar. I don't need to have anybody else have any pizzazz. I got the ultimate pizzazz guy, you know, ever, you know, to put on the uniform. And I got some horses that I got Clydesdales that for whatever the reason, they can go from Clydesdale to Thoroughbred in a minute, a la Derrick Henry when you look at him in Dallas and the Bills and Cincinnati, you look at him in all those moments. I'm fine. I'm comfortable with giving it to Mark Andrews. I don't necessarily need to be tricking it out, you know, all the time to Zay Flowers. I need to, you know, pick and choose my spots. I already got Justice Hill. Obviously, he's not going to be in the game this week, but I already got Justice Hill where, shoot, Lamar can just flick it out to him, and now all of a sudden, shoom, he's down the sideline. So I think that's where, again, I'm guilty of it too, so it's not like I'm acting like I'm on some high horse and I know everything. I'm not, and I don't, and I could be wrong, but I feel and I sense that from a larger picture standpoint, they're like, yeah, you know, we appreciate Keaton Mitchell. He's going to be a great aid for us, but man, we got the king. Like, what are we worrying about? I think that's kind of been what it is. I think last year we didn't have anyone, and then like, oh my God, did you see what he did against the Lions? Oh my God, did you see what he did against, you know, Seattle? And those are some huge defensive fronts that were like powerful and strong. And he just made them look average. So I think that's where, you know, us, the fan base, you know, again, we look at it, but there's a lot more that goes into it, you know, week to week when it comes to all that.
All right. Well, Q, we'll call it right here for part one of the show. Really appreciate you coming on. Tell folks where they can contact you online or where they can see your work.
Yeah, you know, part of what I do is sports and human movement performance. And you can dialogue with me at missiletraining.com.
Missiletraining.com is where if you are 6 years old all the way up to 85, it doesn't matter if you're high performing athlete, collegiate athlete, doesn't matter if you're a girl or a woman trying to enhance your performance on the sports fields or courts, I'm there. I'm able to help assist, and we do it through a variety of ways, the non-traditional way. But at the same time, if you also want to check out some of my media work, you can see me on WJZ. We have our Purple shows. Our Purple pregame show is my primary show that I'm on. But then also you can see me on Purple Preview and also Purple Playbook.
Now, I'm really interested to know, do you work at all in terms of elder care? Is it almost all athletes? Are any people in their 70s and 80s are having some movement difficulties? Is that somebody you can help, or is that not in your wheelhouse?
That is absolutely in my wheelhouse, and absolutely I do. For example, the one particular lady, she's 73, and when she first came through my door, the biggest thing that I noticed was her balance and her vestibular kinesthetic awareness was off. I needed to help her understand that she can improve upon that. We started working, and literally this is year two of it, and it's amazing, because the one time there was a couple pieces of equipment that normally she would have been like, oh my God, I'm about to fall. And she was like, jump, boom, boom. You know, she just jumped right over it, kind of kept on going, and, you know, was on her way. And my oldest client, who is 85, Richard, he's an amazing man. He does a lot of the Senior Olympics as far as swim. But, you know, he'll come in and he'll be like, yeah, Q, you know, my knee is bothering me. Okay, let's go ahead and kind of, you know, get at it and see how we can help, you know, assist you from a soft tissue standpoint. And yeah, there's some tools that are in the tool belt to help anyone, and it doesn't really matter. I mean, gosh, there have been people that have come through that wanted to lose weight, and then in the process of losing weight, they actually felt better, because it's like, yeah, you know, I guess what I thought was I just wanted to lose weight and kind of sweat it all out. But then they realize my system isn't intended to break you down. The traditional system breaks you down so much that you subconsciously move away from training. And people were like, well, I go on this yo-yo. I've had clients be way more consistent, because once they get it and they see it and they understand it, they're like, ah, so this is why I need to move and do what I do, so my body can withstand and be durable once I leave the facility. Too many times, strength and conditioning, performance coaches, different, you know, personal trainers, instructors, all those type people, too many times you're like in the moment, in the group, in the individual, in the gym, in whatever studio, all those different facilities and places. And it's like, okay, I feel great. But what about empowering you after you leave there? That's the big thing. And that's something that I think people, they don't respect and realize for their body, that you need to not only end the situation, but when you leave, how can you be empowered? I want the 73-year-old lady to know that she can step off a curb with confidence and like be no big deal. And if she fell, her tendons and ligaments and her overall musculature is durable enough to withstand it and know how to get back up. I want the 6 to 12-year-old kid to not break down. And in that breakdown, they have the smoothness of being able to move, so their coaches could be like, yo, I like how they are moving. I want them to continue to play. They're not injured or hurt, and they're moving well, and they're helping us win.
All right. Sounds great, Q. And it sounds like a service would be really valuable. And in particular, as a population ages, that I think people ought to consider going to your training for that. Other folks out there, thanks for listening again. Really appreciate having Q on. If you want to do something nice for the show, show somebody else. Always word of mouth is our best way of doing it. Like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, and write us a 5-star 50-word review if you don't mind taking the time to do that. Q, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you so much.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hessilo V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.